On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we contemplate the Texas Rangers. Will they be relevant into September? They're certainly playing quite well. Since it is September, we go around the league and talk about all 12 teams currently in playoff position and ask one big question before finishing with some September call-ups. All that and more on this episode of Baseball Barbacast.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world with no voice left after seeing Oasis last night. I'm Jake Mintz, that's Jordan Schusterman, and that's probably not true. I would say high number of overlap between baseball podcasting and Oasis fandom. I am currently in New Jersey in Secaucus, not at MLB Network, but at a hotel. After seeing the last great rock band last night. And that is why my voice is a little bit fritzy.
That's okay. You're gonna power through. This would not be the first time that Jake has hopped on a podcast after a wedding or a concert, or in this case, both. I understand you had quite a busy Labor Day weekend, but it is
no
great
days
to
off.
See you here on this Tuesday morning. It's Tuesday morning.
Yeah, I worked on Labor Day. I worked my vocal cords off. Baby. So with it being the start of the final month of the baseball season, we thought this was a good time to zoom out, to step back, to go to bird's eye view and just take a look at where the standings are. We have 12 playoff teams that have been pretty much locked into those spots for a while. At this point, we're going to give each of those 12 teams some love and some attention. But before we do that, we must begin with a 13th team.
And that is today's opener, the Texas Rangers, Jake Mintz, who are on
what?
A W6. A winning streak of six games is relatively modest, but in the case of this baseball season, where we are wondering, will another team make things interesting in September? You mentioned those dozen teams that we're going to get to. You pull up the Fangraphs playoff odds and you're looking at those 12 teams, all of which have, 85% chance. But with this recent Rangers run of six games, which includes a sweep of the A's in Sacramento and a dramatic comeback victory against the Snakes in Arizona on Monday night, the Rangers are approaching 20% playoff odds, and they're only a game and a half behind the Seattle Mariners for the third AL wildcard spot. So before we get to the teams in playoff position, we did want to talk about Texas a little bit because this is a team we have generally discarded over the course of this season. And frankly, they have given us many reasons to do so. This is not a team that has really caught a lot of momentum at any point while they have been on the fringes of the playoff picture because of the number of injuries that they've been battling, really on both sides of the ball. Their pitching staff was really carrying them in the early half of the season. And then the offense was so disappointing and so injured that, they fire their hitting coach and they bring in Brett Boone, who has a podcast and knows ball.
He's a podcast.
But the offense did not really improve very much. And then now we're going into September with really a skeleton crew. And yet now they're playing their best, which is kind of hard to wrap your mind around. They've won 9 of their last 10. As I mentioned, that six-game winning streak. Now, this is coming off a 7-16 stretch that seemed to push them out of the conversation. But at this point, I think what's really glaring as you look at the Rangers in the standings before we get into the actual baseball players is this plus 94 run differential. Okay. I mean, this late in the season to have a run differential that is third best in the American League behind only the Red Sox and Yankees, that's better than the Tigers, that's better than the Blue Jays, better than the Mariners, right? By a lot. Plus 94. Now, it's skewed a little bit by a bunch of blowouts. They have 7 wins of 10 runs or more, which is tied for the most in baseball. So obviously that can impact it. And we know they're not an offensive juggernaut, so that's kind of a weird thing. This is one of the weirder teams I can remember trying to evaluate. Every time I do the power rankings for Yahoo, I'm just like, what do I do with the Rangers? What is your sense on them before we talk about some of the individuals?
I mean, the weirdest thing is that these individuals are not the individuals you would expect, right? If I had told you, hey, we're going to get a late season surge from the Texas Rangers, you'd be like, oh, well, I'm sure Marcus Semien and Corey Seager and Nathan Eovaldi and Evan Carter stepped up. And that's not really been the case. Like, all of those people are on the injured list. And this has been a ragtag group of Michael Hellman and Cody Freeman and last night Alejandro Ozuna, dudes who were not at all part of the 2023 World Series team. Now, the biggest boost over the recent stretch, in my opinion, is Wyatt Langford, who was also not a part of that team in 2023. He was drafted that year, remember, stacked top of that draft. Paul Skeens, Dylan Cruz, Max Clark, Wyatt Langford falls to four. There's rumors, oh, is he going to be on the playoff roster after playing pro ball for 2 months? That doesn't happen. Comes up the next season, and he was like tantalizing, but didn't quite put it all together. Now, he has shown some things over the last couple of weeks. Like, this is a special player, a unique athlete, and he has done some really spectacular things for the Rangers. Because, like, let's be real, like, as fun as Cody Freeman is, like, the important thing is that Wyatt Langford and Adolis Garcia are hitting, right? And, like, Josh Young has been pretty good. Like, that's obviously, that's the real story here to me. Jock Peterson waking up from his nap.
That was a long nap for Jock Peterson, but him even contributing whatsoever has been massive, especially with Seager out. So just to kind of recap the injuries here, Semien has a foot injury that it sounds like he's going to miss pretty much the rest of September. If they get into the postseason, maybe we could see him again. Seager had an appendectomy because he was like, my tummy hurts, which is not a small thing, but it also means we don't know exactly when he's going to be back. It sounds like he will be back at some point, but that is not like he'll be back in the lineup tomorrow, at least as far as I can tell. And then Nathan Eovaldi, season-ending, I believe, shoulder surgery, which is really not ideal. Strained rotator cuff. So they've already lost Tyler Mahle, who was awesome for them in the first half. Evan Carter is injured with a fractured wrist. He's not really been much of an impact player anyway, but it's at least a recognizable face. So you mentioned some of these guys. I mean, they have Dylan Moore, who was, you know, a cast off from the team they're chasing. He's on the Rangers now. We've already talked about Rowdy Tellez, who's been kind of anchoring the middle of this lineup when Jake Berger has been injured. Jake Berger just comes off the injured list. He has a big hit last night. So they're just kind of finding ways. I agree that Langford is the engine. He has been fantastic. And then on the mound, they still have just enough decent pitchers. Jacob deGrom is still healthy and still pitching well. Patrick Corbin is not good, but he's not bad. And that goes a long way in a season like this. You know, last night he gives up three homers, still manages, you know, to pitch into the sixth inning. And Jack Leiter has really started to turn it on. And Merrill Kelly, like at the time when they traded for Merrill Kelly, the Rangers were playing well at the end of July, and it was like, okay, well, don't they need offense more than pitching? It turns out that was very good insurance to go pick up, and Merrill Kelly pitched great over the weekend again. So the bullpen is also incredibly anonymous, and some of those guys, Sean Armstrong has been awesome, Robert Garcia less so, Chris Martin just got back from the injured list. This is hardly a star-studded group by any stretch, but, you know, at the same time, they've been pitching well long enough that at this point you have to at least trust that their run prevention is going to be pretty solid. And if guys like Langford can play well enough, then maybe they can score enough runs. Now their biggest challenge, just looking ahead and like, okay, what are their real chances here, right? Because, you know, Fangraphs gives them just under 20%. The schedule is interesting. It is pretty tough upcoming in the next few weeks. They are going to have to earn it. They have these last few games in Arizona. They go home for Houston and Milwaukee, then they're another road trip to the Mets and to the Astros. Then it eases up a little bit with the Marlins and Twins at home. They finish here in Cleveland. So in some ways, you know, they're not playing Seattle again. So that number one team that they're chasing, or the Red Sox or the Yankees for that matter. So they're not going to be able to make up ground there necessarily. But they do play Houston, and they can really prove it to people like us who are just like, is this team any good, if they can show well against, you know, Arizona, against the Mets, against the Brewers.
I am rooting for the Texas Rangers to stay in the mix, because as much as the division races and the seeding stuff and the buys is compelling and changes the landscape of the postseason, the risk and the stakes involved with one of the teams currently in playoff position getting bounced from that to me will provide much greater theater and drama here over the last month. And that, like, if the Mariners, Red Sox, or Yankees don't make the playoffs, I mean, calamity.
Yep.
Like, heads are going to roll.
Yep.
Jobs will be lost. Not that I'm rooting for that. But, like, the Rangers being involved and sticking mm-hmm. around and being that 13th team that we've been looking for all summer, I think is a good thing. Now, do I think it's real? No. I think there's an element here of us wanting to believe that this is significant.
Yep.
Right? We did this with Kansas City. We did this with Cleveland. Like, I still will never believe in the Reds, this Reds team. And let's talk in a week. Let's circle back.
We'll see how they do against some of these other top teams. But yeah, that run differential just staring us in the face. Like, how bad could they possibly be? Last thing on the Rangers that I wonder about, too, it's not been, you know, declared in any sort of official way, but it's just Bruce Bochy, right? I mean, when you have a manager like him who's already accomplished all that he has, and, you know, at his age, it's like, is he going to do this forever? I don't know if he said definitively one way or not, I'll be back or not. But this could be an opportunity for one more round of, like, damn, Bruce Bochy, you know, what a legend, if he can kind of push this team even to stay relevant deep into September. So we will see what happens there. And yes, you know, Kansas City, Cleveland, Cincinnati, maybe you will give us a reason to have a similar conversation about you in the coming weeks. But for now, Jake, let us turn our attention to those teams already in postseason position. Let's go around the league.
And we will begin with the American League, because we are Americans. We're not nationals, that's for sure. The American League East, as currently situated, the Toronto Blue Jays are up 3 games in the New York Yankees, 3.5 on the Boston Red Sox. The Jays, one of the stories of the summer, have cooled off a little bit recently, and we will begin with them. Our main question about the Jays, when will this bullpen sink this?
Yeah, and because of that bullpen that we are about to talk about, they are only 2.5 up on the Yankees and Red Sox, as it sure seemed like they were going to win the game on Monday against the Reds after a dramatic home run from Bo Bichette, who is just awesome. Oh my goodness.
Awesome.
Bo is on it, on one right now.
Making so much money.
So much fun to watch. Jordan Varsho hits another homer. He's slugging like .580. And it's like, all right, well, this was a weird game, but it seems like the Blue Jays are going to get away with this. They don't. Their bullpen was already gassed after their weekend in Milwaukee, or against Milwaukee, I should say. And because of that, Jeff Hoffman, who has already been struggling, was unavailable. I believe Sir Anthony was also unavailable. They asked Tommy Nance, who has been very good, but is also Tommy Nance. They asked him to get the last outs. Brendan Little, who was awesome in the first half, he can't get the last out. They get walked off. Now, this is a team, as we mentioned, has invested in the bullpen, right? They sign Jeff Hoffman. They trade for Louis Varland and Sir Anthony Dominguez. They're bringing in some of these new guys. And yet we're looking at this group and we're wondering, how are they going to be able to close games? And, you know, last year when the Blue Jays were not good and not relevant, they were, I mean, the bullpen is what sank them when they were bad. To think that this is still going to be potentially a problem when they are good is really troubling and disappointing, all things considered, when you think about how special this season has been for Toronto and honestly how high you can still realistically think their ceiling is, especially now with the rotation kind of finding its footing and starting to look like something really imposing with the addition of Shane Bieber. So yeah, I mean, that's, you know, we'll have one big question for all these postseason teams. And I think the bullpen has to be the one for Toronto.
Over the last month, the bullpen for the Blue Jays, I believe, is fifth to last in ERA, 26th in ERA with a 4.94 over that span. And there was really like this group of three relievers who for a lot of the year were maybe overperforming. And that would be Brendan Little. That would be Mason Fluharty. And that would be Braden Fisher. Thank you.
Come on. Braden Fisher is due. I think he's back in the minors. So that proves your point. All three of them, I think, Flew, Hardy, and Fisher are both back in Buffalo right now.
There was the moment where they went to Flew, Hardy against the Dodgers.
That wasn't that long ago. Yeah,
that wasn't that long ago, right? They had Flew, Hardy go get Ohtani and Mookie or whatever.
Yep.
And Freeman or whatever. And it was whoa, amazing. Flew, Hardy. Again, relievers are volatile things. The Jays could go into October and these guys could get hot and get outs and I wouldn't be floored. But it is a concern. I think that Jays fans were understandably frustrated with the front office's lack of aggressiveness at the deadline. I know they went and got Varland and Sir Anthony, but with the number of top end relievers available, I think they probably wanted a little bit more. Ryan Helsley's been something of a catastrophe. Is he tipping pitches? Whatever. That's, I think, the level of player they were looking for, and they didn't get that. And I am worried that it will come back to bite them.
Yeah. Last thing on the Blue Jays, again, what's so incredible about Hoffman, he's allowed 14 home runs. That is an astonishing number for a closer. And Chad Green allowed 14 home runs before he got released. So when your bullpen's giving up homers, that is just, it's one of the most soul-crushing experiences you can have as a fan is specifically, no blown lead is enjoyable or, blown save, but the homers can just be just devastating. And listen, he's got 76 strikeouts in 57 innings, right? Hoffman's still, there's still glimpses where it's this dude's awesome, but it doesn't feel safe. It just is a terrifying watch right now with the with the homer, right? When you're susceptible to that, that's why nobody's going to trust you. And again, I still think Jeff Hoffman's going to get the ball in the ninth inning in the postseason, but it's going to be a little scary.
And it sucks because he started so hot. Yeah. Remember the first couple of weeks, I was like, this is
untouchable.
I was like, this is the best reliever on the planet.
Yep.
And then since then, it has been an utter catastrophe. Yeah. Okay, so behind the Blue Jays, a nice little surge of late from the New York Yankees, who have been playing well. I'm sure they were beating good teams wrong. The biggest question about this club down the stretch is if they can beat good baseball teams. They just went 7-1 against the White Sox and the Nats, which,
good. Should have been 8-0.
Great.
Honestly, should have been, or I guess 7-1. One of those games was against the Red Sox at the end of that.
Excuse me.
To avoid getting mopped. But yeah, this should have been 7-0 against the Nationals and the White Sox. They can't get the mop on Sunday. But now it's all right, every time the Yankees fans start to feel good because they're pummeling these terrible teams, they face a run of good teams and it's the reality check. And that's what's maybe about to happen as they have the Astros, Blue Jays, Tigers, Red Sox coming up. Now, after that, Twins, Orioles, White Sox, Orioles. So we might just get fooled again back, three more times before the end of September, right? They could just struggle again for the next 2 weeks and then they kick the crap out of these bad teams and play their way to, the one seed and maybe the division if the Blue Jays keep struggling, maybe the top wild card team. I am prepared to be fooled to some degree, but this next stretch of playing the good teams, even Yankees fans are I don't think this team's going anywhere for how poorly they've played against good teams.
Well, it's just you can't believe this. There's no reason to believe that when they crush the bad teams that anything meaningful has changed, because all season it has been this roller coaster of playing the opposite of playing to your competition, I guess, right? They have been at times non-competitive against good teams. Why would Yankees fans feel comfortable and confident that they're going to show up against the Astros?
Yeah, well, they can prove us wrong this week. And then the other obviously massive question is just when is Judge play the field again? It felt like we were heading towards it when we saw him throwing. That was last week, right? Where there was actual video evidence of him throwing baseballs. But I believe he still has not appeared in the outfield. And as far as their roster construction and flexibility going into the postseason, let alone for the rest of September, it remains a massive deal. So I don't know if we have a latest update on that, but that remains one of the bigger questions left for this whole season.
It's such a big deal. So take a look at August, right? Giancarlo Stanton, in the month of August, had a 1253 OPS. Okay. He can't play every day.
Yeah, that's a silly problem to have, isn't it? He's running out there. He's doing his best in the outfield.
I know, but God bless. It is such a, funny. It's not fair to say funny, but it is such a specific problem for this team to have. Right? It's like I cannot believe that this is the thing. It's like all for years it's been like, we got to keep Stanton healthy so that he can be his best offensive self. And here he is being his best offensive self. And every time the Yankees send him into the outfield, the entire fan base is like,
please be careful out there. Anyway, Aaron Judge also, listen, if he can beat up on the bad teams and hit a bunch of homers, then great. He'll probably win MVP, which he obviously still has a great chance of anyway. But those stats count the same. So if you're a Yankees fan stressed about whether Aaron Judge is going to win another MVP, don't worry. I think he still has a pretty good chance. All right, let's go to the Boston Red Sox, Jake Mintz. And my big question for them is really just, this has been a one heck of a season for just a content standpoint. Okay.
My question is, can we be normal for a month?
Right. Exactly. Can we find some level of normalcy? Can we settle into a roster that we believe in, a roster that we understand what it's going to be every day? I'm still looking at a group that's like, how is Yoshida still on this team? Why are they playing Rafael at second base? Why? Like, there's so many weird things still occasionally happening here. And yet, they are playing pretty well. I know they dropped a series at home against the Pirates. That's fairly inexcusable. But I still watch the Red Sox. I'm like, I don't know, man. Why not in this American League? Like, I could totally see a world where we get to the end of this of September and we're like Red Sox best team in the AL. That is not a difficult thing to envision. But they need to finally listen. The rosters have expanded. You've got rid of Walker Buehler. You've extended Aroldis Chapman, who's been one of the best relievers in the league. Like, that's exciting, you know, moving forward. But you know you have him there. It's starting to come together. You know, you have Roman Anthony, right? Like, he's playing every day where we're going with him. There are still some parts you're trying to figure out, right? We've got Nathaniel Lowe's in there now. Okay, he's your first baseman. Fine. Let's just settle in so I know what Red Sox team I'm actually watching. Is it going to include Dustin May? Probably not. Is it going to include Peyton Tolley? Maybe, right? I mean, I'd certainly have fun watching that. But that's to your point. Can we just be normal for a month and then look like a damn good baseball team going into October?
Peyton Tolley, huge deal. Made his debut over the weekend against the Pirates, against Skeens. Rose to the occasion, looked incredible, was electric, punched out a lot of guys. The fastball is as special as advertised. And if he can be he could start a playoff game. Like, that's totally reasonable. I still think it'll be Crochet, Bayo, Giolito before him. But Peyton Tolley's going to play a significant role in the playoffs for the Red Sox, because his stuff, besides Crochet, who, you know, best pitcher maybe in the world, top three, like, Tolley's got the second best stuff on the team for any of the starters. And I think that that's pretty significant. Let's move on to the Central, the AL yep. Central, where the Detroit Tigers have been on cruise control for much of the summer. They are up by a absolute avalanche over the Kansas City Royals.
Nine games
right now. And the Brewers kind of took a lot of the Tigers' energy, not in a, you know, problematic way, but a lot of the space and time we were giving to the Tigers, we gave instead to the Brewers, because, boy, that was fun, wasn't it? So the question with Detroit heading into October is, can they survive on Tarek Skubal and pitching chaos once again?
Yeah, and, you know, last year, because it was so out of nowhere, it was hard to, like, complain about how they were doing it, because it was just like, who cares?
Like,
this is fun. But now you have a chance to have the number one seed in the American League. Like, there is an opportunity here. You have the easiest path to a division title of any of these teams. You've been able, in theory, to coast without, you know, sweating too much in the division for much of the summer. And yet, the pitching chaos is less endearing when it's like the like plan A almost. You know, last year it was like, oh, I guess we're in a playoff race. I guess we're going to have to figure this out beyond our Cy Young candidate, or Cy Young unanimous winner, I should say. And this year, you know, they have made these additions along the way to some degree, but because of enough regression from the some of those main characters from last season outside of Will Vest, it's just like I'm not feeling awesome about it. And you're held at a different standard this time around. And so that's why it's going to be on Jack Flaherty to step it up. It's like the fact that we're like, oh, don't worry, we got 41-year-old Charlie Morton. Like we're chilling. I'm like, okay,
everyone relax.
I love Charlie Morton, but I know AJ Hinch, I'm sure, loves Charlie Morton. You know, that's a cool reunion that has taken place. But that just seems like maybe not the best path forward. And this is still a lineup that, while clearly better than it was a year ago, is still not one that's necessarily going to overwhelm the opposition. So I would like to feel a little bit better about where this pitching staff is going into October, and I'm not really sure what that looks like beyond Skubal.
The strategy of pitching chaos is only as good as the relievers that you can be chaotic with. And in 2024, the Tigers' bullpen was a freak show. I mean, they had so many guys getting outs. And this year, that just hasn't been the case. And they had to go, remember, out at the deadline and get a ton of reinforcements to help the bullpen. And that's even with signing Tommy Kahnle over the offseason. And so, look, Kyle Finnegan has been incredible for them. I don't believe he has earned an earned run yet for the Tigers. Will Vest, okay, recently. Tommy Kahnle, okay. Rafael Montero, fine. But like the Tyler Holton show, he got a Cy Young vote, right? You got to say
MVP vote. MVP vote.
Not the same. Relievers, they're volatile. And so I think if the Tigers do go down earlier than we expect, it'll just be because in one of the, you know, they're going to roll Skubal out there in game one. And, you know, I think they have a very good chance to win that. And then they're going to have an opener for, you know, Casey Mize or Charlie Morton. And they could just get cranked.
Well, and this is the thing. To me, it is still more about those other starters. I agree in general when we're talking about the pitching chaos strategy. Yes, it's the relievers that you can use in any role. But those guys have mostly stepped up. Do I think Kyle Finnegan is going to be perfect for the rest of the way? No. But it's to me, it's more about Morton, Mize, and Paddock and Flaherty giving you some semblance of normalcy of a start. And that is what I'm a little bit more concerned about as we head down the stretch. Let's go to the West, Jake Mintz, where the Houston Astros have a 3-game lead over the Seattle Mariners. And the question about Houston is simple, and we're starting to get the answer very slowly if you've been watching us at bats recently, but it is all about Yordan Alvarez. What is this guy going to be when October begins? Because before his lengthy injured list stint, he was a bad for pretty much the first time in his career. I mean, that's a little misleading because, again, it just looks especially bad because it was the beginning of the season. So he was kind of stuck with those numbers when he came back. He has had some cold stretches over the course of his career, but it did not seem like one of the best hitters on the planet, which is what he has been and what he has proven to be. It's just a few swings. It's one homer since he came off. I mean, it's starting to look like Yordan again. Now, because of the injury that he had, these hand things that have been haunting him all season. Remember, this is still a guy that also had multiple knee surgeries and they're asking him to play the outfield. There is going to be the looming concern about durability no matter what as we move forward with Yordan. That's part of the thing to consider. But if he's in the lineup, it's just a completely different team. I mean, and there's really only so many hitters you can say that about. And so for a Astros a team that has managed to get this far with a billion people on the injured list, they're starting to get guys back, not just Yordan, but also on the mound and Christian Javier and Luis Garcia. But Yordan is, I mean, that's the guy. That is the guy.
He's also the guy because this team's issue has been a lack of offensive punch, especially over the last month before he got back. Even with Carlos Correa is on this team now. Correa, Pena, Walker, and Ramon Arias were the only average to above average hitters for this team in August. And so Altuve has been really disappointing. I know he homered. I believe he homered yesterday, which is good to see. But Yordan is just a potential game changer here. Like you said, he is, when he is cooking, there are few hitters that have that level of fear factor and impact in the middle of a lineup like Yordan Alvarez.
Yeah, and they've also, you know, lacked left-handed power to a pretty extreme degree. Jesus Sanchez has kind of addressed that, but not in the way that Yordan can. So he is certainly up there as far as individuals we were watching closely. Let's go to the team that is, I guess, technically chasing them, although they aren't. They're not running fast, I would say.
They're getting distracted. This is how I would chase someone. I'd be running after them, and then I'd go to, you know, the mini mart and get a snack, and I'd look at my phone. Yeah.
No, this is like, hey, you this see is story? Not. Again, they're still there, right? Three games back are the Seattle Mariners, but they have been kind of within the striking range for a while, because the it's not like the Astros have been playing awesome, but Seattle has been one of, if not the worst teams on the road since the All-Star break. And that continued on Monday, getting their ass kicked by the Rays at the Stein. They lost a series in Cleveland. Got an up-close look at that while they were here. And again, like, you look at the Mariners roster and you're like, yeah, that's a playoff team. Yeah, it's not that complicated. But their history and their number of times they've come just short in September, even since they have been good over the last half decade, it's hard not to be like, uh-oh. And you have the Rangers, who are doing some real chasing, have the Royals and Guardians, who are, you know, on the fringes, kind of spooky. And that's the question, is will the Mariners actually let this opportunity fall with a roster that is arguably the best that it's been?
The best.
In this the run. Best. And that is what was so disappointing, potentially.
When the Mariners at the deadline went out and added the Diamondbacks to their lineup, we looked at the top six, and this is as good of a top six in the order that the Mariners have had in this era. Yep. And the pitching, particularly the starting pitching, has just been underwhelming. Jordan, what is happening with Luis Castillo?
Oh, man. I mean, he has been so frustrating. He's given up so many hits. I know it sounds very simple, but there's a lot of ways to struggle as a starting pitcher. Giving up a ton of hits and just, I mean, all these pitchers live in the zone, right? So more than really any other staff. And so when command is a little bit off, this is a huge distinction between command and control, right? Because none of these guys are really going to end up just like walking the house. That's not really something that happens with Mariners starters. But when they are not commanding their pitches, when their pitches aren't quite as crisp and aren't playing in the ways that they have, they will give up hits. They will give up hits. They will give up homers, especially away from Seattle. And that has cost not just Castillo. It has cost Kirby on the road. It has certainly cost Bryce Miller as he's been coming back from injury. Logan Gilbert, a little bit more inconsistent. You know, Wu has been as good as you could possibly ask. But those other guys are just, it's just, this sometimes will happen when you're throwing too many strikes.
Castillo, over his last six starts, has allowed 9 homers.
Yeah. How many hits and how many innings, if you have that with you? Because that's really...
39 hits in 28 innings.
Yeah, that's too many hits. So a lot of traffic. And yeah, I mean, Castillo is, he's the guy. He should be the guy. I know these other guys have passed him in terms of accomplishments and talents. But in some ways, you're like, oh, that's a great 5 starter. But the way he's pitching right now, he's pitching like a 5 starter. And that is very disappointing for, I think, the highest paid player on the team, or at least close to it. So the question of the Mariners is, yeah, I mean, can they hold on? Because they have the roster that looks like if they can get in, they should be able to maybe be a threat in the postseason. But they have to actually get there. Let's take a break, Jake. When we return, we will talk about the National League playoff teams. We'll be right back on Baseball Barbecast.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbecast. We did the American League. Let's do the National League, and because we are East Coast elitists, we will begin there on the East Coast, the National League East, where the Philadelphia Phillies hold a 6-game lead over the New York Mets. The sky was falling last week for the Philadelphia Phillies when they showed up in Queens and forgot the rules to the sport that they're all paid to play. And the Mets wiped the floor with them, sweeping them. The 10th, this was just 10 consecutive wins for the Mets at home over the Phillies, postseason included. I mean, that is bizarre, House of Horrors stuff. Mm. And I had a conversation with someone on the Phillies where I think they were like, yo, must win tonight. And then they lost. And I was like, not a must win. Not a must win. There are no must wins. Because, you know, like, you'll probably just go out there and kick the crap out of, you know, the Braves, and the Mets will lose to the Marlins. And, oh, that's what happened, is the Phillies took 3 out of 4 from the Braves over the weekend. The Mets lost 3 of 4 to Miami. And now that lead that was 4 games and looking hairy is back up to 6. These two teams play a 4-game set next week in Philadelphia. That'll really determine the way this thing goes. And the Phillies are just, they're so funny, dude. It's like, it's always a crisis. There's always some crisis going on over there. The rotation deserves a nice hat tip. Since Zach Wheeler went down, they're 12th in ERA, but I believe they're first in FIP, first in XFIP, second in K rate, sixth in walk rate. Christopher Sanchez has just been so, so good. He's got to finish in the top 3 of the Cy Young. He's been a huge add. They just went out and added Walker Buehler, who's going to make a start for them on September 12th. But for me, the number one question about this team is what the outfield mix looks like down the stretch and what that might tell us about October.
Yeah, so, you know, we had September call-ups. We'll talk more about them later. And Buehler is an interesting addition just because he's a famous player who they're now bringing in, clearly as some sort of response to losing Zach Wheeler, just in terms of adding depth. But they decided to add Garrett Stubbs as their additional outfielder instead of...
Not outfielder.
He has played outfield before. As not an additional outfielder, instead of adding an additional outfielder, I should say. Because they could have brought up Johan Rojas or Otto Kemp. Is that correct? Who we've seen, of course, in the big leagues.
Or Justin Crawford.
Or Justin Crawford, one of their top prospects, yes. However, they go with Garrett Stubbs for reasons that we can get into. But also, it's really a question when you're saying, okay, who are we talking about? Who are the outfielders that we're talking about that are in the big leagues? It's the existential question about Nick Castellanos and whether he should be playing every day, let alone at all anymore. Where does Max Kepler fit in? Where does new addition Harrison Bader fit in? And then Brandon Marsh, who it sounds like has been playing much better recently.
Here are some facts, some unimpeachable truths about Nick Castellanos. Since August 1st, he has a 509 OPS. That is a 41 WRC plus, so a 59% worse than league average. That is the third worst, behind only Pete Crow Armstrong and Kobe Mayo. Yikes. Now, the difference between, say, Pete Crow Armstrong and Nick Castellanos is what, Jordan? Is that Nick Castellanos is not exactly providing elite center field defense every day. In fact, he is providing the opposite. Whatever metric you'd like, whether it is your eyeballs or a bunch of numbers that you don't understand, guess what? Nick Castellanos sucks at outfield. By StatCast, he has been the worst defender, the least valuable defender by fielding run value, negative 12 fielding runs this season, which is really bad. Okay, so Nick Castellanos has what? 1, been a bad hitter this year. 2, he's been a bad defender this year. And 3, he's being pretty grumpy about all of it. There was a moment earlier this year, remember, he got like suspended for a game by Rob Thompson. I almost called him Rob Thomas. By Rob Thompson.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
After they got into it during a game. That was because Thompson like wanted to take Castellanos out for a late inning defensive replacement, which is completely reasonable. The Phillies are flush with really good outfield defenders on the team.
That's the sad irony of this whole situation.
Right? Yes. And so Castellanos was pissy about it. And then for a while, they didn't take him out. And then this weekend, I believe on Saturday, They took him out of a game after he made a good defensive play. He like threw a guy out at home. Then they removed him in the ninth inning so that they could go with a very good defensive outfield of, I believe it was Kepler, Bader, and Marsh, right? Castellanos after the game was like grumpy as hell. Did you see these videos?
Yeah.
They're like, is it frustrating? He's like, yes. And I don't know, man. Just what planet is he living on? Like, does he think he's good at defense? I understand if you have enough pride and he has earned it over the years by being a good offensive player. That is true. That is a fact, right? But there's no world in which he genuinely believes he's a better defensive outfielder than Harrison Bader at this point, right?
Yeah, I would assume not. And that's what's kind of weird and frustrating and where, like, why this is an interesting thing to monitor moving forward is because who are they trying to keep happy here? I mean, I guess that they clearly think that there is still a value for Nick Castellanos as a hitter, and maybe they think the best version of that is one who is in the outfield and not sitting on the bench. Now, you could still look at his offensive numbers and be like, we're letting him play outfield and he's not hitting either. So what are we doing here, right? And especially when we're talking about a lineup where it should not rely on a decent version of Nick Castellanos anyway. You know, it's not like, oh, man, if we don't have Castellanos bat in there, how are we going to score runs? I mean, even if he was playing reasonably well, I don't think that would be true. So that's why it's a really strange thing to kind of watch unfold.
And Bader's been raking since he came over.
Yeah.
It's just very bizarre. I think there's a world in, because like here's how it's going to play out. Okay. One is they just like don't put him on the playoff roster. I think that's unrealistic. I think he'll be on there. But I guess there is a world in which he continues sucking this much and is being a baby about it. And they're like, Nick, like, come on, dude, you're not one of the 26 best players. That's a fact. And you're not going to be on the roster. But then if you do put him on the roster, you have to start him in the lineup because his bat is, in theory, track record good enough. But then if you take him out of the lineup deep in a game to put in Harrison Bader, is he going to throw a fit in a playoff race or like in a playoff series?
Like at that point, I just don't know how you can help him, right? Like if that cannot be something that they are concerned about at that point in the season when you consider the stakes of this Philly season and what he can and can't contribute here. So I think it's also, again, just about it for a lot of fans, just the opportunity cost of not seeing Justin Crawford, not, you know, letting Johan Rojas form what would be the best defensive outfield in baseball, probably with Bader and Marsh. Right. Like there are other opportunities to improve this Phillies team that do not include Nick Castellanos. All that said, I also think that it's not the most important thing for this team. I'm definitely interested in it because he has been such an important part of the roster for the last little while. But I still kind of feel like, you know, how these other starters hold up, how, you know, what Lizardo looked like on Sunday night was very encouraging because he's certainly had an up and down season. And what, you know, if, I mean, it's hard to imagine Buehler pitching his way into any sort of, you know, October relevance, but who knows, right? They're still going to try to figure out what their bullpen looks like once Jose Alvarado is not eligible to pitch for in October. So there's a lot of moving parts here. And, you know, the Phillies, as we know, the stakes are as high for them as basically any team.
One quick thing for them. This whole thing is just, do they hit in October? In my opinion, like I think this team is good enough at run prevention that with the pitchers they have, they'll keep scores low. Are they chasing and flailing outside of the zone like we saw at the end of the NLCS in 23 and like we saw against the Mets last year? That will just determine how deep they go. I think the most significant change for this team this season, besides godlike Kyle Schwarber, has been Trey Turner and how his game has shifted. I mean, if you go by war this year in the NL, I believe he is the second highest F4 in the National League behind Otani.
Yep.
Good player. And that he, I believe, no, excuse me, he passed Otani. In F4.
Oh, he might have passed him this past weekend. Yeah, he might be number one.
Does that include pitching? I don't know. But the part of the reason for that is he's changed his approach, right? So Trey Turner, speedy leadoff guy, made a lot of contact, starts hitting bombs. And this year he is basically, he's admitted this, like the Phillies wanted him to kind of be more about making contact, wreaking havoc on the bases. because they have so many other guys who can drive the ball. And as a result, we've seen his chase rate drop by about 5% this season. And I think that that's definitely related. He's not looking to do as much damage. Now, he's still hitting for power, but Turner has just been sensational for them this season. And I think this version of him could add a new dynamic in October.
What you just said about his approach, that's great and true. The reason he's up there is because he's having the best defensive season of his career by far. He's like 99th percentile in outs above average at shortstop and rates as one of the best defensive shortstops in the league for the first time ever. So that is why his WAR is where it is. And also, yeah, if he can sustain that level of defensive excellence into October, that's also a huge deal, because that was a talking point about Trey Turner as well, was his defense. So yeah, no, I'm with you. I mean, but I think that's a much more behind the numbers, because generally he had the skid that required a standing ovation to to break out of it. But for the most part, Trey Turner has been a good offensive player. But the defense now being not just good, but like elite, that is really what has changed his overall value. All right, let's go to the Mets, Jake. Oh, the Mets. They had quite a win yesterday. Oh,
big win.
This was kind of a messy one in Detroit, as Juan Soto continues to astound. I mean, we could just start there and just be like, hey, folks, Juan Soto is on this team. And when we get to October and Juan Soto's on the team, it's going to feel a little bit different. Lindor's cool. Pete's really great. Oh, maybe Vientos need back up. No. None of that matters as much as Juan Soto being on the team. He looks amazing. So that's probably going to cover up for a lot if this offense is getting back to the version that we expected. Yeah. That said,
Run prevention remains
something of a mystery.
I want to hop in here. I want to go on New York Sports Talk Radio and call in and be like, you know, I'll tell you guys, it's a good thing the Mets went out there and got Juan Soto. Because for months, a couple months, it's like, oh, he's a bust. He's worth the money. It's like, no, dude, this guy is incredible. He's incredible. If the Mets didn't have him, they wouldn't be a playoff team. They wouldn't be a playoff team.
Correct.
If they didn't have him.
Correct.
Okay. Sorry, he's amazing.
It's also great because, I mean, that's just off the Turner conversation. As bad as ever in the outfield, hilariously. But you know what?
Terrible.
Who cares? Who cares? Because he's,
doesn't matter.
He is.
Doesn't matter.
You can make a case. You say he's best hitter. You can still do it. I know, and he was having a down year, but I'm still looking. He's right up there, 100th percentile X. Well, but once again, he's starting to elevate the ball. He's drawn more walks. He's, you know, the
good player.
He's like, dude, he has 26 stolen bases. He's going to go 30-30 this year just for fun.
Yeah.
Right?
He was bored.
All right. Anyway, Juan Soto. We love Juan Soto. All right.
Can he pitch,
let's talk about the pitching. Juan Soto can't pitch. Ooh. That I feel pretty good about saying.
Shohei Ohtani can.
That's why, even though Juan Soto finishes with 45 homers and 30 steals, he will finish second in MVP or whatever. Okay, anyway, this rotation is the one that is in the most fascinating position, because you have these hotshot rookies, Nolan McClain, Jonah Tong, maybe Brandon Sproat at some point here. You have veterans who were performing at levels that we were like, well, this can't sustain. Clay Holmes, David Peterson, Kodai Senga. But instead of regressing to like, oh, those guys are like solid threes, fours, they've just been awful, right? Senga, just atrocious recently. Manaea, who at this time a year ago, it's like best we've ever seen Sean Manaea. Oh my gosh, this can't wait to give this guy the ball in October. And then he shows up and he does. It's like, oh, Sean Manaea. Sean Manaea just not very good right now. Just not very good. He's not very good right now. And so you're kind of starting to ask some tough questions here, because, you know, you get to October, especially if you are in that wild card position, you got three games to keep your season going. Who's getting the ball here? Who's getting the ball? Are we giving it to the guys making the money, the guys that have been around, or are we giving it to the kids who look like they will strike out the world?
The only thing to me that is certain is that if Nolan McClain continues pitching at a level near what he has been, which is unbelievably good, he needs to start one of the first two games. I feel confident in. He has the best stuff on the team. Maybe Jonah Tong's is better. But in terms of what he has shown, McClain's the depth of his arsenal plays at the big league level it plays right now. So I think he has to get one of those starts. I think David Peterson would get the other. I think when it's all said and done, David Peterson, if the Mets can line it up, will get game one. He was the most consistent starter for them over the season. It now is his ability to give you length less valuable in that setting when you're going to go to your bullpen earlier anyway. I'm willing to, you know, should you just go to Jonah Tong for three and then toss it to your bullpen? I don't know. And I think this last month of Mets baseball, because I think the Reds are a sham, it's like, how do we figure this out? Right? Let the games decide this. And I do think in the end it will. And Kodai Senga is the one who I would just, here we are again. Like, what is this guy? He has shown an ability to be a top 15 starter in the world. And then there are times where it's just not competitive at all. And based upon the comments we got from Carlos Mendoza, Mets manager, did not exactly sound like someone who wanted to go to Senga the next time through. This is from John Harper. Quote, a lot of non-competitive pitches, having a hard time competing in the strike zone. Pretty sure we're going to have some discussion what's next for him.
Last thing on the Mets before we go to the Central is, it's funny to imagine they just put Clay Holmes in the bullpen where...
So funny. I was having this conversation with someone.
It's the easiest one because, you know, with these other guys, it's like you never really know how it's going to work and where they're going to be comfortable.
You know the stuff's going to play.
Clay Holmes, I mean, this dude pitched, what was it, 10 times last October? 12 times?
No one pitched more. Nobody pitched more often in October.
I believe if the Yankees had extended the series, he would have had a chance to break the record for most appearances in a single postseason. So now how would that work, like downshifting from this rotation role into the bullpen? You know, will he be like, no, I'm a starter? Like, that would be hilarious. Like, there's a lot
he recreates the Marcus Stroman, I'm a starter.
It's just, you know, it's like, no, dude. And it's like, was this the Mets plan all along? That's also kind of funny to think for how well it was going the first half. They were like, yeah, well, he'll be great for the first half and then he'll tire out and we'll put him back in the bullpen. It'll be great. It's like, okay. David Stearns, what a genius. Anyway.
If you ask anybody around the Mets about all this stuff, they will all bring up Tyler McGill, whose name we have not said, who kind of fits in between these two groups where he has shown flashes. He has missed time. He is going to be coming. I believe he's back soon or just came back. Like, that is another important element. And I think come playoff time, it's going to be super piggybacky and they're just going to try and stack these dudes on top of each other and try and find the outs.
Carlos Mendoza, you about to earn that money, baby. We about to see some managing.
Managing.
All right. Speaking of managing, let's go to the Milwaukee Brewers. Where
pull
Pat
your
Murphy
pancakes
got thrown out.
Out
of the game on Monday, screaming at Jim Wolf.
Screaming at Jim Wolf is always great because he's the most ripped umpire.
Yes, but also like one of the most well-regarded. He was so calm. He's just like, yeah, come scream at me, Murph. I don't care. Alan Porter, same thing. One of the best in the biz. He was behind the plate. But a couple check swing calls don't go the Brewers' way. They're playing the Phillies. Really back and forth game, and Murph let him have it. But Pat Murphy is not necessarily my biggest question about the Brewers. My biggest question is about someone on their baseball team, really two players on their baseball team. It's Jacob Mizorowski. For some of the same reasons we just talked about with the Mets, what role is he pitching in? Can he hold on to a rotation spot into September and into October as his innings count increases? As his all-star appearance fades into the background and we remember who we are talking about here.
A child.
We're not just handing this kid a postseason start. And Jackson Churio is the other one that I'm thinking about. And we'll talk about Jackson Merrill here for similar reasons here when we talk about the Padres. But the Brewers have kind of just done all this with Jackson without Jackson Churio, and now he's back. And he's another guy that, you know, it's not Yordan Alvarez level. But that's a kind of starred offensive talent that I'm looking at the lineup and I'm like, oh, yeah, no, I'm scared. I'm worried. I'm not looking forward to pitching to this lineup. Jackson Churio changes the complexion of the Brewers in that respect, and having him back at the top makes them look more like a team that I'm like, yeah, that team could go to the World Series. So I think Churio, how he looks coming back, he looked fantastic in the month before he got injured. after a slow first few months. So I think Churio is really important, but I think I know you're focused on Mizorowski as well.
Yeah, I think that the Brewers and the Mets are actually pretty similar with all these pitchers that they can stack up off one another. The difference is the Brewers also have starters that you trust, right?
Yeah.
Like you trust Peralta, Priest, or Woodruff, and then Quintana is Quintana, where he's going to, you know, in the playoffs, four and dive. But Mizorowski just hasn't been very good. Now, the stuff is still electrifying, and there's reasons to think that he can get you out in October. But, like, are you really going to give this kid a playoff start? I would probably say no. And so at that point, if you're not going to give him a playoff start, does it make sense to try and onboard him into something of a relief role for this year? Look, I'm not saying put him in the bullpen forever, but there is value in making sure he knows how to do that, right? And I'm curious to see if and when they make that decision. I mean, they have a number of interesting starters at AAA. Robert Gasser and Chad Patrick, chief among them. I know they've got Tobias Myers in the bullpen right now, who was one of their breakout arms a year ago. They have guys they can go to. And I would be surprised if Mizorowski is being leaned upon to start games in October. And that doesn't mean he shouldn't have been at the All-Star game or he's a fraud. It just means that he's 12.
Yeah. Yeah. And that said, Shelby Miller injured last night. The bullpen with McGill already out is thinning out, so those starters are going to be very important. And it's also why they're going to have to keep scoring a bunch of runs. They scored a bunch of runs last night, still ended up losing. But man, Bryce Terang has been unbelievable for the last month, getting Churio back. Do they get Rhys Hoskins back at some point? That's kind of a strange one where it seems like he's rehabbing. They're not rushing him back because they have first base and DH already occupied. But could he kind of reemerge down the stretch? That would be interesting. But they just got Jory Ortiz back. I know that says more about their defense than their offense, but definitely some more moving parts with Milwaukee as well. Let's go to the Cubs. Ooh, the Cubs.
So at the beginning of the season, it was like, wow, Cubs bang. Can they pitch? And as the season wore on, we were like, maybe not. And then the offense got cold. And in August, the rotation stepped up. Best rotation ERA in all of baseball in August. Cade Horton, unbelievable. Imanaga, incredible. Assad, Colin Ray, Matthew Boyd were all just totally sufficient. And the offense is still kind of stuck in cruise control. And so our big question down the stretch is, can the offense return to being elite? Kyle Tucker, PCA, Seiya Suzuki are the three main characters in that lineup that need to rediscover what they were earlier in the year if the Cubs are going to want to have any semblance of postseason success.
Yeah, because, you know, we were waiting for that for the rotation to prove it. And then once they did, the bats went cold. So we've seen all the components of a very, very, very imposing team at times during this season. The talent is in place. But for how bad PCA has been over the last month, He's now slid down the lineup. He's batting sixth and seventh again, which was obviously not the case when he was, you know, had whatever 25-25 in the first half or whatever the ridiculous numbers were. So listen, I mean, the reality with Pete is we knew there was going to be some level of regression. That amount of chase and whiff was not going to hold up. But it's another one where, man, has it, you know, in the way that like the Mets rotation has regressed to just like actively bad. Unfortunately, that's what's happened with Pete. Now, you know, you're still getting awesome defense in center, and he never should have been asked at any point in the season to be carrying the offense. But it was a driving force for multiple months, and now when that goes bad, it just looks a little bit more thin. But I think Suzuki's just as important. That's another guy who was incredible for the first few months, and his underlying stuff looks a little bit better that you think he's going to break back out. But yeah, it's just – and right, you know, Dansby is just kind of – like, you have some pretty big names here that you're just not quite getting that star-level production from. And I think it's in there. I think it's in there. But we will see. We will see if they can actually get it all clicking at once. Because if they do, you know, maybe it's too late to catch the Brewers. But, you know, in the standings, I believe they still have a pretty comfy – I think they're still, what, two games up in that top wildcard spot. So they still have a good chance to get home field.
Yeah.
And that is not insignificant either.
Can I ask you a question? So this weekend I went to this week the wedding, the wedding I was at, the groom, big Cubs fan. Okay.
No. Yeah.
A couple of people there, big Cubs fans. And the groom asked, like, what do I think about the Cubs? And what I do think about the Cubs is that I'm not hopeful. I'm generally pessimistic about the Cubs. Should I have told the groom that? Or like on his wedding day, on his wedding day, do I say to him like, hey, they're going to be great, buddy. Like, how would you handle that? Let us know. BaseballBarbercast@gmail.com.
What point of the
day? Do you lie? What do you say?
When during the day, like.
It was the night before at the welcome party.
Night before. Okay. So you didn't like. But also you could argue that's worse because you're just like setting the tone for the weekend.
Sure.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I think you might just gotta hit him with some false optimism and the night after the wedding, just be like, hey, just so you know, man,
hey,
I was looking out for your mental state. In reality, I don't trust this team whatsoever.
You gotta hit him with like one of those MLB.com headlines when the team loses.
Oh,
you know what I'm talking about? Where it's like
Cubs fall, but all so many great things happened. Yeah.
Here, let's see what it was. Let's see what it was when they lost to the Rockies on a walk-off on Sunday. Cubs head home after 5-4 trip, ready for September baseball. So like that's what I would say. I would say I think they're ready for September baseball, man. Congratulations to you and your lovely bride.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, we'll see. Can the Cubs play well enough in September where we're like, yes, this is one of the best teams in the National League. This is one of the two or three best teams in the National League. I think they can. Maybe. all right. Let's finish with the West. The Dodgers. You know about them, right? Dodgers are 2.5 games up over the San Diego Padres with a month left to play. We know they do not play each other anymore. But they do still have a bunch of baseball games left. The Dodgers do have 7 left against the Giants. So if the Giants want to, you know, ruin the Dodgers season, they have the opportunity.
Giants
have
been playing better.
Giants have been playing better. Willy Adames continues to look great. It's cliche, but it's simple. How healthy will this Dodgers pitching staff be by the end of the month? This is basically the healthiest it's been the whole season as we talk right now. This is a team that now has Ohtani back. It has Snell, Glasnow, Kershaw, all in the rotation. Tanner Scott is back. Kirby Yates is back. Michael Kopech is back. Here it is. Like, that's looking like, yeah, okay, whatever. Roki and Gavin Stone. Of course, Bruce Starr. Okay, yeah, they still have some injuries.
Alex Vesia. Alex Vesia is the only high leverage arm currently out. I would say
that, but by Dodger standards, I mean, they are, this is a healthy group on the mound right now.
Right now.
Will it be when we get to October? History says no. Who is going to drop? Who is going to look even better? I don't know. I don't care to predict. I hope they all stay healthy and are all great because we wish the best for all the major leaguers. But that is just, can they get to the finish line and win another division and then have a pitching staff that they can use at their own discretion as opposed to, well, he's the only guy left standing.
And it'll be fascinating to see how they balance those two things. Because certain bullpen deployment choices, like we really need this out in this game to go up 3.5 in the division, let's run Tanner Scott back out there on a back-to-back. Or are they going to be like, you know what? Let's take this risk. We just need him healthy, even if we're in the wild card spot in October. Now, they could do both. They can accomplish both birds with a single stone. However, I'm very fascinated to see how Roberts pulls the levers down the stretch here in September. Let's move to the San Diego Padres before we take a break. And this one is simple. It is just Jackson Merrill ? Xander Bogaerts going down, Jason Adam going down, two huge pieces of news for San Diego Padres team that, I don't know if you know this, Jordan, low on depth, high on star power.
Yes. But that star power, certainly a year ago, a big part of that was Jackson Merrill. And this year, it has not included Jackson Merrill. And a lot of that is injury related. So I'm not saying, oh, what a, you know, sophomore slump. He's a fraud. No, I believe this dude is still one of the best players in the league. But he's now is the time where it's going to start to be like, oh, hold on a second. We actually need Jackson Merrill to start playing like a star. With Bogarts out, with the Rise struggling to the degree that he is, with Machado struggling to the degree that he is over the last few weeks, this is an opportunity for Jackson Merrill, as much as it is pressure on the kid, to look like one of the best players in the league, which he was last year. And that was why he was a big part of why you go into the draft, like, holy crap, they have Jackson Merrill. That's why they're the best team. That's why we all picked them to go to the World Series at the start of last October and all looked like idiots, right? Jackson Merrill was a big part of that. He has an opportunity to play his way to being that again over this final month against a pretty bad schedule. I would love to see it because Jackson Merrill is fun to watch. Do they have questions on the mound? Yes, especially with the Adam injury and some of the instability in the rotation. But Merrill is the character I'm most interested in.
Before we get out of here, I'm just going to say the Cincinnati Reds. All right, we will be right back after this to fly around some of the notable call-ups for September.
Welcome back to Baseball Barbacast, and we had September roster expansion, which means we have some fun call-ups, and we are going to focus on the kids. Join me in Jordan's Prospect Hut.
The Philadelphia Phillies calling up Garrett, top prospect Garrett Stubbs, to join the club.
Yeah, and the Angels bringing up Scotty Jetpacks. Here comes Scott Kingery, ready to prove his prior.
Love that guy.
You know,
I love that
bonafides.
Guy.
Yeah, sorry, Scott Kingery, we love you, but not a prospect anymore. All right, let's focus on three prospects who got the call. It's more than just three prospects, but these three we're going to lock in on. Let's begin in Cincinnati, where the Reds fans are not happy with Jake after how he landed this last segment, but now we're going to give you a little bit some love because Sal Stewart is here, and Sal Stewart is a lot of fun to watch. This dude is pretty straightforward. It's like, you know, he hits. Who cares what position he plays? He said it himself. He said, I play the batter's box. That was his quote in his introductory press conference. They put him at first base where he's only played two games in his minor league career. Feels like that's kind of not the best way to prepare the kid to play the big leagues in September in a postseason push, but he handled it just fine. Generally has played mostly third and second over the course of his minor league career since being drafted out of the same Florida high school that produced Alex Rodriguez. This is good a player. Miami boy through and through. Manny Machado is his mentor. And he is quite proud of being Mr. 305. But Sal Stewart is important because he has been one of the more, you know, prolific producers in the minor leagues this year. And the Reds offense has been a bit of a slog for multiple years now, but especially this season. And this is an opportunity for him to come up and make a difference. And I would say that Sal Stewart, what is interesting to me about him is, as I mentioned, that Florida high school class. 2022 Florida high school class is pretty astonishing. And okay, oh, this is just niche draft stuff, Jordan, who cares? But even just a few years later, to go back and look at some of those names, at the top was Elijah Green, who unfortunately is looking like, as much as we love his dad's tweets, not looking like the best pick at the top of the draft for the Nationals. But this is also Roman Anthony, right? This is also Jamie Arnold, who then goes to Florida State and becomes this top pick with the A's. And a few other, I think, current big leaguers that have already made it out. I mentioned Roman Anthony, I mentioned Elijah Green. Gerangelo Sancho was in that group, you know, the Mariners switch pitching prospect. And then Cam Smith, I think, is the other fun one who is already in the big leagues, who really broke out that spring in Florida. Of course, he goes to Florida State for 2 years also. So, but Sal Stewart was near the top of that list. He's a guy that's basically always hit. And now he's going to have a chance to do that in the big leagues. Position TBD.
Fascinating looking cat. I tweeted he looks like a mix of Marcelo Meyer and Wario.
Yeah.
He just
good comp.
Can we call him the Pitbull? Like 305?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know if Sal Stewart has a nickname, but I know he loves Miami, so it's not a bad suggestion whatsoever. Let's talk about Harry Ford. Yes, Harrison Ford.
Finally.
He's a big leaguer. Harry Ford is a catching prospect for the Seattle Mariners. Oh, finally, they have a catcher. It's a miracle. They found one. The team that needs a catching prospect the most, the Seattle Mariners. Did we think we were going to see Harry Ford this year? No, because they have Cal Raleigh. They have another veteran backup in Mitch Garver. But it sounds like Harry Ford has been playing well enough in AAA that they were like, you know what? You're one of our best players. And with rosters expanding, you deserve a chance to get a taste of the big leagues. What makes Harry Ford interesting is that by all accounts, the Mariners have been willing, if not trying, to trade him over the last year. Now, is that because they don't believe in Harry Ford, or is that because they have Cal Raleigh and he's their most valuable trade chip? I like to think it's more the latter. And while teams were certainly calling, no one was willing to bite on Harry Ford for whatever deals they were considering. And now I think Harry Ford has the opportunity to kind of settle in as a real backup with Mitch Garver becoming a free agent. Why can't this be a Sean Murphy, Drake Baldwin situation? Honestly, like I think that with how many days they're trying to get Cal off his feet in the DH spot, I think going into next year, I think Harry Ford could absolutely be, you know, in the mix to just he should be given the opportunity to win the backup job. Now, if he's good enough to be an everyday starting catcher, maybe he still does end up getting traded. But I'm excited to watch Harry Ford. He is.
Yeah, he's been a character for a while. It'll be cool to just see him be in the major leagues.
Yeah. Yeah. Fun athlete. Last one is Carter Jensen, another catching prospect with Kansas City. This is also interesting because of, we have Sal Perez, but Salvador Perez is no longer in his prime the way that Cal Raleigh is. And you've been wondering who is going to be the heir to the Salvador Perez throne. They had Freddie Freeman there as the backup. They trade him. Carter Jensen is a possibility. Carter Jensen is fun because he is a Kansas City native, grew up a Royals fan. And now he gets to come up and help the Royals in their quasi-playoff push, which, again, like, we'll take any offense we can get for this Kansas City group. And I know Carter Jensen, who, of course, dreamed of being a Royal, of course, huge fan of Salvador Perez, now gets at least a month to play with Salvador Perez and maybe be his backup next year, if not take over his job in 2026. Those are some call-ups. One more move before we say goodbye, Jake. This is not a call-up, but this is a fascinating transaction. The Atlanta Braves have claimed Ha-Sung Kim from the Tampa Bay Rays. Ha-Sung Kim, a total lost season in his first year with the Rays after signing, what was it, like the largest free agent deal they've ever handed out to a position player? Just injured and bad. And he has a $16 million player option for next season. Clearly not something the Rays are particularly interested in paying. So they put him on waivers and they said maybe some team will buy low here. And the Braves, amidst their terrible season and amidst Nick Allen with zero home runs, they decided, you know what?
Sure.
Let's do it. And honestly, this makes a ton of sense and probably pretty smart.
Good job, Braves. The season is not a loss after all. That's our show today. Thank you, folks, for listening. Thank you to Andrew Hartz for producing. You can email us, baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. When should you tell the groom that his baseball team is not elite? We will be back on Friday, my 30th birthday, as I fade slowly into the darkness. Thank you all, Jordan. Goodbye.